Before lunch, we tried to align these hit points with the anatomy. And then we tried this scaling or warping of the anatomy to the individual hit points. And it might be good or wise at this point to still check the alignment of the head points with the anatomy. So, because you did the scaling, so you might want to see how the head points look now. So maybe you should still go to the neuromac channels, MRI registration, and edit, so then you can see how well they are now fitting with the anatomy of the head points.
Sir, I still have the deformed man.
Yes, that's fine. You can maybe it's interesting to see how it works if you run all the analysis using the deformed head. Of course, you can, if you want, you can also just do it again, this warping, and then just choose scale instead of the warp.
Okay.
And it might be a good idea, if you haven't done it so far, that you take some kind of notes of these steps that we are doing, because I thought that we will then, after we have gone through all the steps together, that we would then go through the other data that I sent you. So then you can try to apply all these steps to the other data and explore it using the same methods. Okay, so you have the registration check done then, because we will then move on to the next step, which is then getting closer to the source localization. So these were the first two steps. So choose the anatomy and then do this registration between the anatomy and the functional data. So, the next step is then to build the head model. I'll just close the door once more. Alright, and there are many different head models that you can build. In Brainstorm, you basically have two options. But we'll go through anyway several of these so that you know, if you use some other program, what they are. And so what does it mean that we are building a head model? It means that we are trying to model the shape of the head and the different layers that are then between the active cortical area and our sensors. And this modeling is particularly important for EEG because the electrical fields are affected by the different tissues separating the sensor and the brain area that is active. With MEG, the magnetic fields are not that much affected by the head tissues, but there is still a small effect. Okay, so the usual case is that we would try to identify where is the scalp. So I guess you can barely see the blue circle here. Then where is the bone? Possibly also try to identify where is the cerebrospinal fluid. And then of course, where is the brain? And if you want to be really kind of fancy with your methods, then you also try to separate where is the white matter. Right. And what you need to do is that you need to have at least knowledge of the thickness of each of these layers and the electrical conductivity values of the different tissues as well. For adults, this is easy because we have standard values for this. I mean, that means like young adults, usually students. So if you go, for example, to elderly populations, then these values might change already. And in young children, of course, then the situation is very different when you have, the skull bones are not yet fused together very well, for example, or if you go to babies, then you have fontanelles and so on. So these values are very different for children. But in Brainstorm, as I said, we have two options that we can use. We can use this three-shell sphere model, which is basically just modeling the skull bone and the brain with basically balls in the MRI image. So it's not very anatomically accurate, but it turns out that for MEG it doesn't need to be really anatomically very accurate, the model. And we still get decent source localization results even with this kind of a model. There's also an option to use a three-layer boundary element model so that these three tissue types are then more realistically modeled based on the actual MRI. This option needs kind of a third-party plug-in into the Brainstorm, so that's why I thought that I wouldn't show it here. But there are other possible models than these two. And here are some of them. So you can basically kind of divide them into two types. So simple models and then realistic models. And as I said, they can be spheres, these simple models, or they can be ellipsoids. So you can imagine that an ellipse might describe the shape of the different tissues a little bit better than a sphere. And depending on which program you're using, there can be three or four layers in these models. But then there are more realistic models. One is called the boundary element model, and the other is finite element model. And basically, as the name is implying here, then in the boundary element model, you are defining the boundaries of the different tissue types. For example, here there would be the boundary for the gray matter, the cerebrospinal fluid, skull, and then the skull. There is a small problem with this model. So if for some reason there is a hole in the tissue so that the thickness is 0 millimeters, this model can't handle it. And this might be the case, for example, for the cerebrospinal fluid. So if the participant is lying down in the MRI scanner, then at the back of the head it could be that the brain is actually touching the kind of skull surface. Of course, there are different layers there as well. But it might look in the MRI as if there is no cerebrospinal fluid, and then there would be a hole in the model. The finite element model is trying then to circumvent that, so that it's using meshes that can then tolerate these holes in the different tissue types. Right, and at this point we would then calculate our head model in the Brainstorm. And you can do it from the Neuromic channels, and then it says compute head model. So it might sound much more complicated in theory than it is then in practice, because you don't have many options then here. Right. So you should have this kind of a window open then. And we will want to restrict our source solution to the cortical surface. So we'll choose the first one. And from here you can then choose which kind of a model you want to use, either the boundary element or these overlapping spheres. Let's choose the overlapping spheres in this case. Right, and then you just press OK. I will just press cancel because I have already calculated those here. Let's see if this works or not. But you should get this kind of a... No, it's still not working. Option here saying overlapping spheres, and that's your... head model. And once you have that, you can then right-click on it and go to check spheres. And then you can see how the spheres are aligning with the frame volume.
Sphere,
yes.
It's a cortex surface by Amarillo volume.
Yes, the cortex surface. So. Have the head model ready, and then if you right click on the overlapping spheres you get this check spheres, and then you can see how your model looks
like an onion.
Yes, so it covers kind of most of the brain volume, right? And you can slightly adjust it here depending, for example, on what kind of responses you're interested in. So if you are interested in visual responses, then you can move the sphere, for example, so that it is just covering the occipital areas. Or if you're interested in, let's say, in the auditory responses, then you can check that it's covering the temporal areas. Right. And before we then calculate the sources, would be good to know what exactly are we doing. So let's go through a couple of basic principles here. So one is the forward solution. So this is basically how we calculate the source estimates. Here I have a couple of topographies, and then I have this kind of schematic head where there is this kind of a strange needle. This needle-like thing is a representation of the active cortical area. It's called an equivalent current dipole, or just dipole for short. And the sphere here tells you where is the center of activation for the source, and then this line tells you where is the current or the positive direction of the current. And basically when we have created the head model, we are able to calculate then the topography when we know where and in which orientation the source is in the brain. For example, in this case the source is here in the Sylvian fissure, and the positive current is going inside the head, and therefore the electrical field looks like this. So the negative side of the voltage or the electrical field is then kind of coming out from the head, so we see it's kind of a negative pole here. And then if you rotate the source, then again we can calculate like how should the electrical field look like. So in this case the source is just rotated so that the current is going now downwards. And then the electrical field will look like this. Right. Are there questions about this? Well then, the next point is that, okay, this is for electrical fields, what about magnetic fields? So, do you know how the magnetic fields then would look like, for example, in this case? Any guesses? Well, I know at least some of you definitely know this answer.
Give us some options.
Yes.
To choose from.
Okay, it would look identical. No, it would look like opposite polarity. No, it would be rotated 90 degrees. Yes, exactly. So, basically, when you have the electrical field flowing in this direction here, then you always have a magnetic field that then goes around it perpendicularly. Which would then mean that in this case, this field pattern would be rotated like this. So that's what you should be then looking at in the demo data. What about then in this case? Well, this is something called a radial source, which means that the current is pointing directly at the center of the head. And in this case, the electrical field is, or the magnetic field is then going around the current like this, which means that we don't actually see anything in the topography. So basically the MEG is in, can't see these kinds of topographies, but the EEG can. Alright, so this is the forward solution. When we know where the source is, we can calculate its topography on the sculpt surface or at the sensors. Okay, but then we have the inverse problem, because usually the case is that we don't know where the active source is, so we need to do it the other way around. So we have our waveforms and they form topographies, and then we need to guess from these topographies where are the sources. And just to illustrate how difficult this is, I'm just making you guess. So how many sources do you think there are in this case? One, two, three, four. You can give any guess.
Number of the signals.
What do you mean? You mean these in the waveforms?
Yeah.
So that there would be two peaks? Or? No? So these are each like EEG channels. So no guesses at all? What about based on the topography? Okay. It looks like there's something here, doesn't it? But then at an earlier time window it looks a little bit different. Okay, one or two. Well, if you look at, so this is simulated data. So I have just placed the sources there myself. And as you can see, it's pretty difficult to know based on the waveforms and the topography what's the source structure underlying these topographies. So in this case, there are actually five different sources. They are active slightly in different time periods, and that's why you then get these biphasic waveforms. Okay, but this is basically what the source analysis method is trying to do. So this is the information we have, and then we try to do this. And there are, of course, very clever algorithms to do this, so we don't need to just rely on our own guesses about this. And to make things a little bit more difficult, so there is no single unique solution to this inverse problem. So when you have this kind of a topography, it could be generated by two sources in the auditory cortices, but it could also be generated by just one source in the center of the head. And these are both equally correct solutions. Of course, we can use then anatomical information and information like, okay, how are sounds being processed in the brain, so we know that this is not the correct solution, of course, because, of course, we are presenting sounds to the participant, they need to be processed in the auditory cortices. So we can restrict the solutions based on our prior knowledge and some other constraints as well. So these source methods can be basically divided into two different categories: to distributed and discrete methods. So what you have seen so far have been these discrete methods, so that you have these clearly defined spheres that represent the activation in the brain, and these are, as I said, called the equivalent current dipoles. But there's also these distributed methods, and as you can see, it reflects quite well the name, how they function, so the activity is much more distributed in this case. And there are a big bunch of different kinds of methods under these distributed methods. So we'll go through first these discrete methods, even though the brainstorm doesn't implement them, but that's needed so that you understand how do these distributed methods work, because they are based on this idea. Right. So, the discrete methods. So, here is the kind of the original data that we have. So we have the event-related activity, so the waveform, and then at a certain time point we have a voltage distribution in this case, because this is EEG data. And from this, you can then estimate the sources. Where are they? Based on this scalp distribution, and because we know how the activity should spread through the different tissues. And basically, by moving these spheres inside the head, you can then find a position for the sphere where the topography matches with the original topography. And when you can't anymore get a better solution, the algorithm will stop and give you the source solution. And there's, of course, always some residual variance that cannot be explained. So basically, if you get like 95% of the variance explained from this topography, you are usually pretty happy with your source model. And when you have your source locations, you can also examine the source waveforms. So basically, you can interpret these pretty much similarly as to the original ERP waveforms. But in this case, you just know that, okay, this red waveform is the strength of activation coming from this brain area. So you can see that at this time point, it's reaching its maximal amplitude. And the same, of course, for the blue one. So here is the maximal amplitude for this brain area. Right, so these were kind of signal equivalent current dipoles. You can also model your data using regional sources. So these are basically the same idea. So you have again a spot here for brain activity, but now you can see that there are three lines coming from the spot. This means that we are modeling at the same time three orthogonal orientations. So each of these are pointing in different directions, and therefore we can then look at activity coming from the brain, for example, on the different surfaces of the brain. So for example, activity originating from this surface or this surface. And this is then capturing activity at the same time for both orientations. And then you get three waveforms for each of the orientations. And again, in this case, for example, you can see that this red waveform here is has the largest activation at this time point. So it's this brain area with this direction for the current. And then the second orientation is actually activating somewhat later. So it has the maximal activation at this time point, and it's then this orientation. Okay. Does this seem clear? Okay, so please ask if you have anything that is not clear. Right. So, the distributed models then, they are based on this idea of these dipoles. But instead of having just like one or two dipoles placed in the brain volume, this is then the case. So, the whole brain volume, or if you need to restrict the solution, it can be only the cortical area or gray matter area, is actually divided into these kinds of cubes. So there are thousands of cubes covering the whole brain volume. And inside each of these cubes is then, depending on the method, it's usually this kind of a regional source that captures activation from all three different angles. Or it can be also a dipole, a small dipole in each of these cubes. And the distributed method is then calculating the strength for each of the regional sources inside the cubes in order to get the best solution that produces the topography that we are interested in. And there's of course one obvious problem here. So we have maybe 10,000 cubes here, and we need to calculate the strength for each of them. But in best case scenario, we have 300 sensors. So we are trying to estimate many more values than we have sources of information. So basically, that's of course impossible to do. So that's why there needs to be additional constraints for these distributed methods. And depending on what kind of a constraint you want to choose for your data, you then choose from these different possible algorithms that are available. I guess the most popular one is to use this minimum norm estimate. And it has the constraint that tries to produce the source solution that has the minimum overall energy. So basically, the assumption is that the brain doesn't want to use excess amounts of energy. So the solution that is the best is most probably the one that requires the least amount of energy. And in most cases, the solution is restricted to the cortical surface, and that of course already removes lots of the cubes from the plate, because then you only have like a layer here that you need to be estimating. But there are many other methods as well that use then different kinds of constraints. Okay. Is the idea of these distributed models clear? Okay. So these are the this MNE method is then what we will try with the brainstorm. Try it at this point. So I will just restart the brainstorm again. So this is pretty easy. So the first thing that we need to define is so-called noise covariance matrix. In this case, we don't model any noise. So there's the possibility that if you have like an empty room recording for your MEG machines, because there's always some kind of an ambient noise in the background, and some of the sensors are better than the others, so you can kind of record this without subject data and then use it to correct your source solution. But in this case, let's not calculate it. So you can right-click on your data, and it says here then noise covariance, and then you can choose this no noise modeling. There is also an option that if you have a long baseline, like the period before your stimulation starts, that you could calculate this noise also from that baseline period.
Would it then be input from file and or compute from recording?
Yes, compute from recording. But if you have, for example, this empty room recording, then you could import it from the file that is where you have already calculated the noise covariance then from this empty room recording.
All right, and apparently I'm again on the wrong data set. All right, so then once you have this noise done, then you should just calculate the sources. So compute sources.
So just right click again on the data, and then you get this.
And then you have a few options available.
So there are different algorithms that you can choose from. There's the minimum norm, then there's something called SPM and S-Loretta. So you can then just choose the minimum norm, and we'll use all sensors to calculate the sources. And then you just press OK, and it should then give you the source solution. So basically you should have this kind of a small icon of a brain appearing underneath your raw data. Manage to do this. Alright, and you get the source solution available there. Okay.
So then you can again look at your original data. So
for example, choose the gradiometers. And okay, at least last time this picture was able to draw. Yes, right. Yeah, from the raw, and then you can choose a time point. And then from the source solution, which I don't dare to open, but you can do it. If you right click on it, you get these cortical activations and then display on cortex. And you should then get the cortical surface on your screen with the estimated source locations projected on it. Did it work? All right. So just please raise your hand or ask if you have problems with this. All right, so now you can then basically explore how the sources evolve if you scroll back and forth in this trial time here. And I guess your initial suspicions on the type of stimulation are now confirmed, hopefully, that indeed it looks like it's the visual cortex that is being activated by the stimulus. And it's usually nice to plot at the same time then the topography, so you can maybe plot the 3D sensor cap along with the source solution, so then you can see that does it correspond your solution to the original topography, because with MEG the topographies should match quite nicely with your source solution.